Introduction to Linux and Ubuntu. I should warn you beforehand that some of this material may be a little technical. We try to keep it simple. This is a podcast for the new Linux user. However, getting back into the details of where Linux came from, what Linux is, there may be some things that might be a little technical. Fortunately for you, none of the information is necessary to running and enjoying Linux. So what is Linux? Well, Linux is an operating system like Microsoft Windows or Apple's Mac OS X. Linux is like, you can think of Linux as an onion. First, there's the kernel. The kernel is the central component of an operating system that manages the communication between hardware and software components. A short history. Linux was a rewrite of Minix, which was a rewrite of Unix. So let's start with Unix. Unix is one of the oldest operating systems. It was an operating system originally developed in 1969 by a group of AT&T employees at Bell Labs. Now, Minix is a Unix-like operating system that was written by Andrew S. Tenenbaum to be used for educational purposes. Its name derives from the words minimal and Unix, Minix. Unfortunately, it was released under a license that prevented the use of Minix as a basis for a free distributed software system. The Linux kernel was originally written in 1991 by Linus Torvalds as a non-commercial replacement for Minix. He named it Linux after himself, Linus. Now, Linus Torvalds speaks Swedish, so the I is actually pronounced E, so it's Linus. So technically, you should pronounce Linux as Linux, and if you listen to Linus pronounce it, you'll hear him pronounce it that way. Now, that's just the kernel. There's also the what's called the GNU components. GNU, which is a G-N-U. The GNU project was started on September 27, 1983 by Richard Stallman. Both Richard and Linus had a problem. The GNU project needed a kernel, and Linux needed the other parts of an operating system. You need more than just a kernel. The two came together to give birth to what is properly called the GNU Linux operating system. A little geeky stuff. Linus provided the kernel, and GNU Project provided the basic components, such as the GNU compiler collection, the GNU binary utilities, the bash shell, the GNU C library, and the GNU core utilities. So Linux technically refers only to the kernel. So the operating system should be called GNU Linux, but it's just easier to say Linux. And most people do. So when I speak of Linux, such as the Linux User Podcast, I recognize that Linux is GNU Linux, and that the GNU project had a major part in producing what we call Linux. Now, interestingly, GNU is what's called a recursive acronym. It stands for GNU's not Unix. So you have the kernel, then you have the GNU components, and on top of that, or the outer shell of this onion, is what's called the X window system. Now, the X window system is a graphical user interface used by most Linux systems and is based on what's called the X window system. Commonly, it's just called X or X11. It was developed as part of the Project Athenia, which was a joint project of MIT, Digital Equipment Corporation, and IBM. So you have the kernel, the GNU components, the X window system, and on top of that, GNOME, or KDE. But in our case, we'll use GNOME. GNOME is a desktop environment. It sits on top of the X window system and is a graphical user interface, which you see all the time. There are other desktop environments, such as KDE, which is the most popular one, XFCE, and LXDE. Now, here is Linux rule number one. There is never just one of anything in Linux. Now, this leads to freedom of choice and a lot of confusion. As I just said, there's different desktop environments. Now, what is Ubuntu? You hear it pronounced several different ways, like Ubuntu and other things, but its pronunciation is Ubuntu. Ubuntu is one of over 300 Linux distributions, often called distros for short. Now, unlike Windows, where you just click on an .exe file and install a program, Linux programs are packaged in bundles. Linux distributions are organizations that package and distribute these bundles. Each distribution has a server you connect to that has a large collection of software applications such as word processors, spreadsheets, media players, databases, browsers. These are configured to work with your particular distribution software choices. Now Ubuntu, although it is a community-developed distribution, there is a company called Canonical Limited that oversees Ubuntu. Canonical was formed by a man named Mark Shuttlesworth. He was a millionaire, South African entrepreneur. Canonical is registered in the Island of Man and employs a staff around the world, along with its main offices in London, England. Ubuntu was derived from an older Linux distribution known as Debian. That's why the packages end in deb, because they're Debian packages. Many of the packages in the Debian repository work also for Ubuntu. The name Ubuntu is a Zulu word meaning humanity to others. That's why the skin tone theme in Ubuntu. But it's about building community, and that's why the color choice. Ubuntu's first official release was on October 20th, 2004. So why does this podcast focus on Ubuntu? Now, there are too many flavors of Linux. There are over 300. The new user has to be guided through one. There's too many choices. Like I said before, there's not one thing of Linux. So which one? Well, I chose Ubuntu for a number of reasons. Ubuntu is currently the most popular and widely used distribution. That's a biggie. It's most widely used, so most people will either be using it or at least have known of it. It also has a great model of stability. Now, this is my personal philosophy. Stability is a combination of community and some kind of governing organization. Community plus company equals stability. And for that reason, Fedora and OpenSUSE are also very good. And if I was not using Ubuntu, I'd probably use Fedora as my main system. Ubuntu has also one of the largest communities. It's a very active community. Even as I'm broadcasting to you from Albuquerque, New Mexico, we have a large community, and the community here is largely consisting of people, the Linux community here largely consists of people who use Ubuntu. However, I do have a friend that uses Fedora, but most of the people are using, at least as their primary operating system, are using Ubuntu. Also, it has a good cycle release. A new version of Ubuntu is out every 6 months, resulting in more frequently updated system. The problem with Debian is that it's on a slow release cycle, and sometimes can be as long as 3 years before you get an updated version of Debian. And lastly, I like it. I like Ubuntu. I think Ubuntu is doing a lot of things right. I also like their motto, which is Linux for human beings. Far too often, I think that you get in the Linux community a disrespect of new users. There are several distributions that are very old, that have been around for a very long time, and the people that are using those distributions are very geeky, very well versed in running from the terminal. They're not friendly to new users sometimes, and it's unfortunate. I've seen some things that are quite condescending coming from people who know how to use a computer, and they think everybody should know how to use a computer. And that turns people off. And I'm glad to say that the Ubuntu community is very friendly to new users, people who don't know what they're doing. And so to send a new user to some of these other forums, they could get abused. And in the Ubuntu community, they tend not to be. Not that that doesn't happen, but it doesn't happen as often as what I've seen. So that's the reason why Ubuntu is favored for this podcast. However, it's not called the Ubuntu podcast. It's called the Linux User Podcast. Ubuntu right now is doing everything right. That doesn't mean that they will continue to do everything right. They stop doing right, I will gladly change to a distribution that is. A distribution that's popular and is focused on the new Linux user. Because ultimately, I want to get the people who don't know Linux, who don't know how to do an operating system, who don't know how to run commands from the terminal, to be able to know what Linux is, be able to use Linux, and be able to get the things done that they need to be done. Ultimately, Linux is a better system, but they don't know that if they don't know how to use it. And we have to lower the threshold so that people with no experience with computers, or very little experience with computers, can be able to use and appreciate the power of Linux. So why the GNOME desktop? Well, the GNOME desktop is, of course, one of the most popular, KDE being the other. And unfortunately, KDE has caused me a little bit of heartache in the KDE 4. And I'm not the only one. Linus has also changed from KDE to GNOME for the very reason that there's a lot of crashing and a lot of problems that have been gone on with KDE 4. I enjoyed KDE 3 and used Kubuntu for a little while. Matter of fact, that was the first distribution of Ubuntu that I installed. But KDE 4 is to me, needs work. And they're in the process of working on that. And development in that area is going very good. So we could change the desktop when it becomes more stable. And a lot of people who have left KDE return. We'll, of course, check into KDE every so often to see how it's progressing. But also, because GNOME is the default desktop in Ubuntu, we thought it'd be best to stick with the default. It is also the best one currently available. And since it is the most popular, it is the default in Ubuntu. Ubuntu is the distribution of choice, and it is the one, the desktop that I use. Even when I'm in Fedora, I use the GNOME desktop. One last little note here. GNOME, it's pronounced with a hard G, G-N-O-M-E, GNOME. So that's the desktop that we'll be using. So this podcast is aimed primarily to people who are using Windows, XP, Windows Vista, or even Windows 7. And why should somebody switch from Windows? Well, I'll just give you a few reasons. There's many reasons. But first of all, it's more stable than Windows. No more crashes. There's nothing more frustrating than working on a program and the system crashing. Windows decided very early on in their development project to make part of the program run with the kernel. So when the program crashes, the kernel crashes, and therefore Windows crashes. That was the choice they made because it made it faster, but it didn't make it more stable. Also, it's more secure than Windows. There are no viruses out in the open for Linux. No viruses. Now, there's many reasons for this, but one is the way that Linux is set up. Linux is set up to be a very safe and secure environment. Now, does that mean there'll never be viruses for Linux? No, that doesn't mean that at all. We always have to be on our guard. But right now, there's some factors that bode well for Linux. Linux is actually what they use for the firewalls. Linux is what they use for most servers. When you think about Linux and you think about surfing the internet, realize that most of those are running Unix or Linux or BSD. In other words, what they're using is they're using a Unix-type system, not a Windows system. Now, I've talked to a number of system administrators who they won't use Windows because Windows on the internet has to be shut down and rebooted on at least a weekly basis because Windows will corrupt itself. So Windows is not secure. It's not stable. Linux is both those things. Also, it's easy to use once you understand it. Now, this is going to seem counterintuitive for a lot of people who begin using Linux, but it is true. I have found the more that I know about Linux, the more I'm able to accomplish that I never knew how to do in Windows. Now, I worked tech support for AOL and Earthlink, so I did know a lot about Windows and troubleshooting. But there's something really nice about Linux, is it allows you to customize, it allows you to actually deal with the hidden magic under the hood, so to speak. Windows keeps the hood hidden. In other words, Windows has a very sharp division between user interface and working under the hood, dealing with the program itself, customization or fixing things, and wants you to really feel like you do not have control. You do not know the secret world behind it, which is true because they've divided that line. Linux doesn't have such a hard line between the two. Linux allows you to get in and learn about the computer itself, which is a good thing, and for many people a frustrating thing, because most people who are switching from Linux or from Windows to Linux just want it to work. And so don't customize it. Use it as it is, and Ubuntu does that. It allows you just to get in and work and get things done. The other thing that's interesting is that Ubuntu and Linux in general is international in scope. That is, it allows you to be in any country and get it in your language and have the security of knowing that there are no back doors to Microsoft or the NSA or something like that. It allows you the ability to have it in your language, have it in your national flavor without a American bias in it. It's also free. That is, it costs you nothing if you download it. Now, this is important. The operating system is free. All the programs are free. But that doesn't mean they don't cost. There's many, many thousands and thousands of man hours that go into this program. And you say, wait a minute, how can it be free and worth anything? This is one of the stumbling blocks for a lot of people. They think since it's free, it can't be worth anything. Nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, yes, it doesn't cost you anything. But there's so many people that have put their sweat, blood, and tears into this operating system because they want it to work for themselves. And as a community, each part, placing a part of themselves into this, makes it a better system. This is why it works. It works because it's a community project. It's a community project that's free monetarily, but it does ask, if in whatever way you can, to give back to it. To give back to it, whether you're doing artwork for a distribution, or whether you're offering code, reporting bugs, whatever it is, it's about building a community. And I pray that you understand that although it's free, it is a quality and professional operating system. But it's free also in the freedom of choice aspect. That is, to have one company control your access to the internet cannot be a good thing. Think about that for a minute. One company control your access to the internet cannot be a good thing. Freedom of choice means having a choice, having another choice other than Windows. Now, I don't know about you, but having one company whose program cannot be read and you don't know what they put in it, being in your home, monitoring what you do, I don't know if you ever went Control-Alt-Delete and looked at the communication between Microsoft and your computer. But it does make you wonder, why is my computer always talking to Microsoft? What is it telling Microsoft? You don't know. You can't know. And there's been numerous reports that there are back doors that that Microsoft has in fact created into Windows that allows government agencies to have access to your computer. Is it true? I don't know. You can't know. The only way you could know is to be able to know the code, and you don't know the code. The code is hidden. Once the code is compiled, it cannot be read. It cannot be uncompiled. And unfortunately, that's the case with Windows, that's the case with Apple. And the only way that you can know what's in the code is to be able to read it for yourself, which all open source software allows you to do. And lastly, you are free to copy it, modify it, and even sell it. It must stay free and open source in the sense of freedom. But you can charge. And there are companies that you can go and you can buy a disk. In fact, if you go to the website, linuxuserpodcast.com, you can buy a disk from Canonical, who makes Ubuntu, and it's through amazon.com, and you can buy a copy. Or you can download it from ubuntu.com and get a free one and burn an ISO and do all that. By free, we do not mean that it's you can't sell it. It means that the system is free in the sense of freedom, and free if you download it, of course, from the internet. And let me just also say that one of the great things about Ubuntu and about Linux is a great community, both local and online. And this is a selling point, because community is king when you're dealing with Linux. Linux is, it takes a learning curve. You're going to have to learn some stuff. And although the learning curve has been overcome a lot by the graphical user interface, there are going to be questions. There's going to be problems. And these problems can be solved only when you have a great community who are willing to answer your questions and are willing to talk to you and guide you through steps to answer these things. The other thing that's interesting about Ubuntu, and I want to just go ahead and put this in here, is their philosophy. Their philosophy is rather simple. It says that every computer user should have the freedom to download, run, copy, distribute, study, share, change, and improve their software for any purpose without paying licensing fees. Second, every computer user should be able to use their software in the language of their choice. And thirdly, every computer user should be given every opportunity to use software, even if they're under a disability. That's the Ubuntu philosophy, and it's a philosophy that all the Linux communities, I believe, would subscribe to. So what are the great programs that are on open source and are on Ubuntu? Well, some of the great programs is Firefox. The Firefox browser is like Internet Explorer, except better. Firefox allows you to do a lot of customization with plugins. The Evolution email client is like Outlook, and not Outlook Express, but actually like Outlook, the full version. If you want something like Outlook Express, there's Thunderbird, which is also from Mozilla, who does the Firefox. There's OpenOffice Writer, which is like MS Word. There's OpenOffice Calc, which is like MS Express, or Excel, I mean. And Banshee is like Windows Media Player. So you've got all those options. Pigeon is like your internet instant messenger. However, Linux is not Windows. And if you decide to try or switch to Linux, these are things you have to realize. There's going to be a learning curve. There's no C drive. Windows programs will probably not run on Linux. For example, my wife has the iPhone. The iPhone needs to sync to the iTunes. iTunes does not run on any Linux distribution. So these things are things you need to consider. What are you using your computer for? I do not desire to try to get someone to move from Windows to Linux and then have them have an experience, a bad experience. This has happened in the netbook market, where people got the netbook and thought they were able to just switch over their Windows programs and run them on the desktop, on the netbook. And you cannot run Windows programs, many Windows programs, on netbooks. Now, there are Linux equivalents. And in my opinion, OpenOffice is a far superior product than MS Word or Microsoft's Office. Much superior. I even have an accountant friend who is using OpenOffice and says it beats Excel hands down. But these are things that require you to do a switch over, to change a program that you're used to. And any time that you switch a program, there is a time period, a learning curve. And that learning curve can be uncomfortable for some people. So please, think before you do this. Look before you leap. Realize that Linux is not Windows. Now, Linux is better, yes, 100% better. I would not go back to Windows. I would not be doing a Linux user podcast if I thought Windows was the best system. It is not. Linux is the best system. One distribution of Linux, in particular, that I recommend is Ubuntu. So Ubuntu is the choice for this podcast, and we'll focus on that for as long as Ubuntu follows their philosophy and continues to aim to be able to get new Linux users running Linux.